You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 251 of the Centralian's favorite podcast. I'm Jeremiah Morrill. Today I'm joined by executive video audio producer, Zach Burcham, and my forever co-host, Mr. Dakota Davis. Welcome, buddy.
Today's episode features us again in a candidate series episode. This is the last of the candidate series.
This is the last of the primary.
For the primary. We'll be back doing this again, doing interviews again. Closer to the election in November. But today we have Josh Gilmore and Bobby Plummer. Both of these candidates are Republicans running for the District 54 state representative position. This is carrying on. There was too many of you guys to fit you on in the studio at one time. We were pushing it with the sheriffs, and
Very crowded. You can see it looked very crowded.
It was a full room. Dakota got to run the board.
Yeah, it was warm in here. We're going to be talking to these guys about about all the issues that are facing the state of Indiana that we've talked about with the other candidates, namely education, economic development, land use from the state perspective, roads, the COVID-19 pandemic that happened, and then the food and beverage tax. And then at the very end, we're going to talk a little bit about cannabis legalization and then straight ticket voting, which was an issue that Tom Saunders had carried on through the state house for us conversations. So make sure you stick around.
As a result of this show. That's right. This program is about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh. But hopefully you'll always learn something new. The cops are after
me. Speaking of the sheriff.
I can hear that they're out there working. They're
sheriff candidates. I shouldn't call them all sheriffs. That's
the deputies, law enforcement. Right. Mm-hmm. People with sirens. It's hard to tell. It could be the cat is Marshall rolling through, lights on. We don't know.
Yeah,
it'd have to open up the Broad Street door to know for certain. We just did a fun 20 minutes on Patreon. Some of our best work.
You think so?
I think so.
I think last week's was pretty good. With Sean.
Yeah, that was.
We ate weird food.
That was solid.
Those are always fun.
I don't enjoy it when my mouth hurts after Patreon. So this is a much better show for me.
Yeah, well, you can blame Christy Avery on that. If you sign up at patreon.com/BallsHogOfLiberty at any level, you get access to the Facebook group. That's where we live stream that bonus episode that we were just talking about every week. We give you all kinds of different other bonuses as well. You get show notes ahead of every show so that you can follow along. These are a little bit different shows, but a lot of times we will use different links and sources on topics that we are talking about. Those are also in the show notes. And you get access to that.
I do have an announcement on the show notes side, by the way. Facebook has changed the rules a little bit and how Facebook works and how people are getting into the Patreon group. And I think some folks know that it's out there and they're joining, but they're not actually patrons yet. But we're hoping that they get there. So I think they're previewing the group. Not sure how it's working out. We're going to probably start just emailing through the Patreon function the show notes directly to folks. So if you're a patron and you're in good standing, when those notes drop, you'll get a PDF of those of the show notes. They'll start getting sent directly to you, and you'll get.
There ain't no such thing as free lunch.
No such thing as a free lunch. we provide value to folks, and they get to follow along. So until we figure out this Zuckerberg issue, we're probably going to just deliver it that way.
But Elon Musk buy it.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
Maybe he'll take care of it.
Chris Spangle, our syndicator on the Wall Network, he said, "Listen, I've been mistreated for a long time. Please buy We Are Libertarians for $2 million and we'll see how it works out.
Change.
And he'd probably give us like $30 out of that if it worked out.
Mm-hmm. If you sign up at $50 or more a month, we give you a shout out at the front of every episode. And those folks are Miss Christy Avery from all the way in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Jonathan Phillips, our favorite car dealer in the continental United States. And then Mr. Anthony Meyer, who is trucking down the road right now in his 18-wheeler and hoping that he doesn't blow a tire like we just talked about in the bonus episode. We might have jinxed him. That would be bad luck.
I am. So John is the Mr. Sales, King sales guy over at Andy Moore Buick GMC. And I'm like less than 2 years away from being ready for my next camper puller. And I'm hoping that they start making trucks again so that I can get hooked up with a sweet GMC.
Denali.
No. We are lit at like SLE.
It's a nice $84,000 truck.
I've got the SLT Terrain out there that John sold me. I call it the super slutty edition because it's the SLT, but but honestly, I think we're going SLE. All I care about is remote start, having four wheel drive, and everything else is money after that.
All right.
I do want that 3.0 diesel though.
We also have some sponsors to thank that have sponsored this candidate series. Three businesses have sponsored the candidate series as it's gone through. So tonight on the last episode, we want to make sure that we give a really big special thank you to Weiland's Flowers, the Slick Pickle Party Bus here in Newcastle, and the Big Bounce Inflatables as well. All those businesses have done a great job, definitely helped us out. We run a tight ship over here, so whenever we can get partnerships like that, we really appreciate it. Make sure you go check out one of those businesses and tell them that the Boss Hog of Liberty sent you.
All right. And then there's a little bit of merch, too. I think the merch link is in the Facebook chat here. If you're watching the live stream, it's on the website, all the places. Let's get to know our candidates a little bit. Of course, everybody remembers Bobby. She's elected as the county commissioner two years ago. We get to
2020.
2020. Yep.
I was elected in 2020, seat in 2021.
Yep.
Yep.
And so you joined us through that process. Uh-huh. We've gotten to know each other. We've appreciated the relationship over the years. We've had some. I've dealt with you some as the county commissioner. Now it's been fun. And then on the other side of the room here is Josh Gilmore. And Josh, I have to admit that this race is how we get to know you, man. Mm-hmm. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and bio and what got you into the race, and then we'll transfer back over to Bobby after we chat with you for a minute.
Sure, sounds good. So, yes, I have I will be graduating from Indiana Wesleyan University with a degree in nursing. I actually walk this Saturday.
Congratulations!
Thank you very much.
I'm also a proud Indiana Wesleyan graduate.
So glad to be done. What was your degree in?
Management.
Okay.
Business management. Okay. So I was in that remote class. So I didn't walk until the day I graduated. I didn't get on campus until the day I graduated.
Okay. Yes.
Otherwise, I was in Shelbyville.
Yeah. That's why he's so bossy. The management.
Yes.
Hey, listen. Somebody has to make the trains run on time.
Got to get it all done. Got to line this thing up here. Yeah. So I graduate on Saturday, and that's very exciting. Glad to be done with that. And in addition to that, I have worked. My family's owned and operated a local small business, Cornerstone Campground and Retreat Center, since 2013. I've been in charge of operations there and construction, new construction, old construction, everything. So I've basically helped own and operate that, run the business side of it, and as well as the actual physical carrying of the property itself. So that's a little bit of my background. And then as for why I'm running, I never actually thought that I would be someone that would get into politics. I've always enjoyed watching the presidential debates on TV and all the debates that you would see among different politicians and things. And I was always interested in that and knew that I'd be someone that would be actively involved in the voting side, but never necessarily thought that I would be someone that would be a part of the actual elected side of it until COVID happened. Once that happened and I started to see a lot of the freedoms that we've had in our country taken away from us, I kind of started to notice our politicians aren't all they're cracked up to be. And I had voted for people that I thought, wow, I'm very happy to vote for you. Let's go. And then they would never fulfill their promises. And we would go through and see that all the time. And obviously that's what a lot of people would say. But as a result of that, I saw the freedoms that were taken away. Our churches were shut down. And that's a First Amendment violation. We had businesses that were shut down, and we can't shut those businesses down. That's someone's livelihood. You can't separate someone as essential or non-essential. If that's what you live on, if that's your living, you can't shut that down. So I saw that happening. I was almost kicked out of my university as a result of not receiving the COVID vaccination. And I want to help stand for the freedoms and liberties of all people with that, because I am in the medical field. I've seen firsthand what happens when you decide to try and kick people out of that. And our care goes down significantly. There's a study that I've had that I could get for you guys if you wanted, but it basically said that 1/4 of the COVID deaths probably could have been prevented if we would have had the appropriate amount of staff. and 1/4. That's a lot of people. So yeah,
preventative care was a big problem.
Yes. And then after a certain amount of time, they started firing nurses and doctors for that. And I saw people's liberties and freedoms being taken away. I was sick and tired of that. And then in January, decided after much prayer and consideration that I would put my name in for this seat because I wanted to actually make a change for that because I didn't see anyone else doing it. So I was done with all that, went to the state house, spoke on the floor to try and support some bills that were going to protect people's rights. Those kind of got watered down, thrown to the side, and we had a bill that was kind of garbage put into place. So I, as a representative, thought that I could do more in that seat and hopefully be able to protect those freedoms. So that's primarily why I was running.
All right. That was the spark that that got you going.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bobby, remind us, tell for the folks that don't remember or the first time listening, about your background, your bio, and what said, hey, I'm going to run for state rep.
Oh, let's go back that far. So for those that don't remember, I started getting into the local government in May of 2016 and started attending meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. Put my hat in the ring for commissioner, was blessed enough to win in the primary, blessed enough to win in the general, and have served a year and 5 months as commissioner. I, too, 10 years ago, if you said I'd been a commissioner, I would not have thought so. When Tom decided to retire, we had a discussion on whether or not I should run. And I thought, why not? With my business background, and I knew at the local level and working at the local level for the how many ever years it was before I ran, I wanted to be at the state level to help the local level, whether it be our district or anybody else's district, because we all know that the decisions that are made at the state level affect the locals the most. So that was, and I thought with my background, I would be a good choice.
All right. Dakota, you want to lead us through the next section?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So first of all, we're going to talk about education. And one bill that we've been bringing up specifically is House Bill 1134. That kind of caused a huge debate. We have that separate than like the Red for Ed stuff that we'd seen years previously. But this was centered around a specific piece of legislation, and it was supposed to address critical race theory in schools. And like you were talking about with the bill that you mentioned earlier, things get added, things get taken apart, they get watered down, things change, and it didn't actually make it past the Senate, so it never got put into law. So I wanted
politics happened,
right?
Politics happen, and the freedoms of the people don't get cared for. So,
and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that legislation in particular, but then also what your thoughts are on the system of education in general, what the state has to do with it, what's the role of the state in educating people, and those sort of things. So, Bobby, we can start with you and get your opinions.
So with 1134, and I didn't follow that as closely as some of the other bills, but it was my understanding that the original bill required a lot of the local school boards, a lot of the local teachers, from what I was hearing, and I will say I didn't read the entire bill from the get go. With 1134, there were some things that I probably agree with. Do I believe that parents need to be involved in their child's education? Absolutely. Do I think that every parent is involved in their child's education? Probably not. Do I believe that the majority of the teachers in Indiana are well-intentioned and good? Absolutely. But just like with any other organization, company, what, doesn't matter what, you have great people and then you have some that are not so great. But when I was talking to teachers, the way the bill was originally written, I thought it was going to be more burdensome too. I mean, the way they were talking, you know, they were going to have to update their lesson plans constantly and make them public. I don't have a problem with parents having, I want parents to be involved, but do I think that every 5 minutes or every day new updates have to take place? Probably not. But do I believe that parents need to be involved? Absolutely. Do I think that if there's an issue at the school, if my great niece goes to a teacher with an issue, And she talks to the teacher about it. Do I think that the teacher needs to call my niece and say, hey, this is what is going on with your child? Absolutely.
Right.
I do. Do I think that teachers are the new parents of the kids in school? No. And, you know, it's not the teacher's responsibility to raise the kids. That is the parent's responsibility.
Well, and I think this is, you raise a good point. We spend a hell of a lot of money of public funds on training teachers, right? They go to IU, they go to Ball State, and you've got teachers that last 2 to 3 years. I'm married to one who's now doing something completely different.
Correct.
Making more money and not dealing with the structure.
Oh, our teachers are woefully underpaid.
And not dealing with the struggle of being a third grade elementary school teacher. There's a systematic issue with the way the system's set up entirely.
Absolutely.
And you're, you know, the state's paying to pay for the teachers, but then you don't get the payback on them on the back end.
And honestly, the state needs to kind of step back. I think the state is too, and I think the federal level too, Department of Education at the federal level, Department of Education at the state level is too involved. Again, you know me, Jeremiah, I'm a local issues. I'm a home rule person.
You want your school boards making decisions, not the legislators, right?
Correct. Because again, people try to make everything a one size fits all, and what fits at Carmel doesn't fit at Tri High.
Right. You're going to have wildly different issues from Gary, Indiana to Tri High.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's hear from Josh a little bit on the education issue.
Yeah. So with this bill, as you guys have already said, we know that the teachers were going to need to be putting out lesson plans every day. We were going to need to know what was going on with that. I don't know if I would necessarily want it to be that involved for the teachers, but the teachers definitely need to have accountability and transparency to the parents. So I would want to make sure that no matter what the bill was, that at the end of the day, they may not put a lesson plan out daily, but they would be putting out a weekly lesson plan. Not a lesson plan in total, but an outline of this is what we're going to be teaching. So the parents know what that is. We don't necessarily need them to have that daily thing where they're going out every day and saying, this is my lesson plan for the day. But when it comes to the more important issues, the social issues that are really hot button topics today, like critical race theory, social emotional learning, when it comes to teaching those aspects of the lesson in the curriculum, we would need to be able to pull those out and say, that's when this is being taught. This is the day that we're going to be saying, okay, we're going to be teaching your second or third grader about transgenderism, about LGBTQ, about all this stuff, because those are the days that in reality, in second and third grade, I've been to over 3,000 houses. I have not heard one family that says, I want my second or third grader learning that. They don't want them learning about any heterosexual things either.
How many of them have said, hey, this has come up in my school, my kid's school, as you've knocked on the doors?
If I had to give you a number.
I mean, is it something you hear people bringing up to you as experiencing it?
I have heard some people bring that up to me about it. Not necessarily specifically the LGBTQ, just in general, the sexual things that they're teaching in our schools at young ages. I'm talking, I guess, more for if you were to hear that. I know that Hancock County has more issues with that than Henry County. Henry County isn't really having the issues with that. But across the board in general, since from the state level, this is the area that we have to focus on because this is who we're representing. But what we do will affect the whole state. So in terms of that, I mean, I know that up in Carmel, that their schools are, they're crazy. Like some of the things that they have them doing, they have, I've heard of this thing where they have on their side, this little badge that they can flip and it's got different colors on it. And the teachers can't talk to the students until they say, okay, what color is it? So red's associated with anger or whatever the color may be. And they have that going on and they're saying, okay, well, I'm angry now, so I can't talk to you because that could possibly be too bad. They're eliminating that human interaction with a teacher altogether in that area. So like I want to make sure that doesn't come to Henry County, to this district, because that would be very detrimental. We need to, once again, kind of get back to the bill itself. But the bill itself, I did support a lot of the material in it because it would have pulled out the sexual issues that we're teaching in our schools. And that's really primarily what I think this bill was focusing on. In addition to eliminating critical race theory, they wanted to get rid of the social emotional learning associated with that. So I would have supported those aspects of the bill. But as for schools in general, I would support less governmental influence into that. Because as she was saying, local is always better. I mean, the larger the entity that makes the decision in government, the more freedoms people under that lose.
And I guess both of you, this isn't something that was on the show notes, but if we're talking about getting more local control in our school systems, mm-hmm. then obviously if you don't like something that's being taught, because, I mean, you can't make broad sweeping legislation on schools, but then mm-hmm. also say, I want local control.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So if
there are certain things that you are teaching, going to need to put in there, though.
I understand what you're saying. But if your school, local school, is teaching something that you don't like, mm-hmm. then do both of you guys support a parent's choice in their school making? Like,
one of the tenets of Indiana education that I think is fantastic. Josh, you may not know this about me, but I'm a homeschool student, right? Mm-hmm. I joke that I'm a sixth grade dropout. I went through to Blue River through sixth grade. Seventh on, I was homeschooled. State of Indiana says, hey, if you're a homeschooled student, all we require of a parent is to keep attendance. That's mm-hmm. it. You have wide educational freedom in the state of Indiana.
Yes.
And you have any family can make that decision that I'm going to change public schools. I'm going to mm-hmm. go to private school.
Which is fantastic.
I'm going to go homeschool. I think what Dakota is saying is valid here of a lot of times we hear that folks want it both ways. They want the state to do what they want the state to do, but not when I don't want it. I want the school board to decide.
Yes. So, I mean, I don't know if you know this about me. I was actually homeschooled K through 12. I never actually ended up going to a public school. I have since taught an anatomy and physiology class at a public school. So I have experience in that, which is why I think I'm able to speak to that a little bit. But I was also homeschooled K through 12. And when I was saying those things earlier, it's one of those aspects where there is always going to be some form of state legislation that needs to take place. I'm all for smaller decisions or mm-hmm. smaller bills that wouldn't be sweeping across the whole board. Like, let's make decisions in smaller bills, more smaller ones, so that we don't have one big one that no one likes this part of it or this part of it. And there'll be less ability to fight over certain issues because we're going to have to come to terms on this one issue past that. Like, getting it back to where in Henry County, for example, our literacy rates are somewhere between 40 and 45%. I mean, and that's awful. We can't be having that as a school system in general. So I think that if we were to pull back on some of the things that teachers are teaching, those social
literacy
issues.
Literacy in what grade? Like, are we talking that's kind of high across, school? Yes. Like 45% of high schoolers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can see that.
Is it not read or read at their proficient
level? Cannot read proficiently at their level that they should.
Right.
I mean, you can read the and right. so.
But yeah, we're not when saying you get to, 45% of high schoolers can't read.
Yeah, I guess I should make that clarification. They can read, it's just not proficiently enough to be able to succeed in life.
11, like plenty of 11th graders that are reading at an 8th grade, 9th grade mm-hmm. level.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see that happening everywhere. People come to universities and they can't read well. I'm sorry. And they're not able to be able to participate in these classes in ways that they should be. So I think that high schools need to be training them in the basics of math, reading, writing, I mean, even before that. Get back to those basics. Stop bogging the teachers down with all this extra garbage that they need to be teaching. Get back to those basics so that these teachers can teach what they're there to do and then be done with it. Leave these social issues out altogether, because it's not that hard to just teach math. 2 + 2 = 4. And then obviously when you get higher up, it's more advanced, but it's not hard to just stick with that. So that's the kind of legislation that I would want to put in, is just getting it back to the basics, pulling everything out of it, because we need to get it so that these teachers can do what they are paid to do, which is teach.
Right.
And like get back Bobby to those basics.
Saying, mm-hmm. Like what Bobby was saying was the parents are the parents.
Mm-hmm. Right. The parents are the parents.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got a what? 2-year-old?
Yep.
Yep.
Two.
Yep.
Parent-teacher boards.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not there yet.
Well, yeah, you're not there. Well, preschool.
Dakota, you'll be homeschooling in no time.
Highly recommend it.
You got to homeschool. He's got to go to Try High.
No, he's probably going to go to Try High.
Good job.
37th generation Try Titan.
Hey, there's Second. Nothing wrong with that.
My parents went to Newcastle.
Where'd her parents go?
Probably Try. Or, yeah. I know her dad went to Shenandoah.
Man, that's some cross county pollination going on.
For sure,
he's got all the high schools in his blood.
Not to get off subject, but did you see the new graphics at the gym?
It looks fantastic.
Oh, it doesn't look fantastic. Nice. Absolutely, they didn't look like that when I was in school.
They're going to win 3, maybe 4 more games a year just with that home court advantage.
Shut up.
Listen, I'm a sixth grade dropout. So,
let's move on here to economic development and economic issues across the state of Indiana, and this. The reason, one big thing that we wanted to bring up with this is that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of companies have started questioning the ties that they have to foreign countries like mm-hmm. China, India, other Singapore, other places. And they're looking at ways to bring a lot of those jobs back to America. Mm-hmm. Samsung is one of them. A lot of auto manufacturers are doing the same thing. So whenever you're in the state house and you're looking at economic development and how we can be competitive, mm-hmm. First of all, what do you think Indiana has to offer all of these companies? What do you think our strong suits are? And then what other type of jobs would you like to see here? Are you thinking we just want all the jobs that we can get, or are you a little bit more picky on what you would want to entice to bring to Indiana?
To bring to Indiana or to the district? Or both?
Yeah, you can do both. Yeah.
Well, and I think Indiana has done a fairly decent job of bouncing back. And we are, I mean, if you look at the, let's just look at the growth that's coming.
Yeah.
I started to say west, but east.
Yeah.
Sorry. Get my directions. You know, and we're
Dayton is growing towards us. I know. Need to build a wall.
Directionally challenged.
You got to save Richmond.
Yeah.
The 937 is coming this way.
Hey, it is. Richmond is growing to the west.
Yeah, it is actually.
Cambridge City isn't safe anymore.
It is not. Pershing isn't safe anymore.
Check local listings on what that town's actually called.
Oh yeah.
Depending upon
where you when you grew up and where.
It may be Germantown.
It may be Germantown. I knew it as Germantown. A lot of the different things that are coming to the state: Amazon, Walmart distribution. I mean, and we are. Indiana is known for manufacturing, and it will always be known for manufacturing. I mean, if you just look at all the interstates, I mean, we are built for a lot of commerce just with all the interstate systems and the state highway systems that we have. But I would like to see more of, you know, like Tom's that came out to – that's now at Knightstown, you know, the medical
device manufacturing,
more technology, call centers, you know, kind of diversify a little bit in that area. Because I think we're poised. We have the skill set of workers. We have all of the colleges. We have the infrastructure, and I think we are poised to bring a lot of those things. People are wanting to get out of the big, you know, leave California, leave New York, you know, leave some of these other places that are high taxed. And I think we are poised to bring them here.
Is there any action that you think the state needs to be taking to encourage certain investments? Or something we're doing that we shouldn't be?
I don't know that they're doing something that we shouldn't. No, I don't. I think things are set right
now.
There has been a lot of growth, and I don't know that I would want to go tinker with that right now until we see that looking forward a little bit more that things need to be tinkered with.
All right.
Gotcha.
And to Josh, the economic development idea and the state's involvement.
So you all had asked what Indiana has to offer. I mean, as Bobby was saying, we have the interstates necessary. We have 65, 69, 70, 74. I mean, these are main thoroughfares. So what we have to offer to other companies is just the ease of transport of their materials and goods. I don't necessarily see a specific business that would be bad to bring in. I'm all for bringing in any kind of business to the state. The more that we get in here, the more economic development we'll be able to have, and the better our citizens will be able to actually live their lives because they'll have these jobs available. So as for that, I can't think of any job specifically that I wouldn't want to come in. I can't say I'd like all of them, but there's nothing I can think of off the top of my head that would be bad to me.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, there was a big controversy of a factory that almost came to Muncie, and then mm-hmm. I think there was rumors of it coming into Rushville as well, and I think it's moved around a couple of times. But it was called Walt's Kiln, and it was essentially mm-hmm. a battery refining operation that was potentially going to create some environmental issues. Mm-hmm. That was a big topic about 12 to 16 months ago, particularly mm-hmm. up in Delaware County. And I think it was the council had approved it, and the city didn't. You know,
yeah,
you know how these local land use mm-hmm. things get bounced around, Bobby.
No,
They already have the Exide battery factory up there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's one more round of runoff?
I think also in terms of like other things that businesses can be or that we can be doing in the state of Indiana is, look, if you go down to Rushville, they have that entire industrial park that's been sitting empty for
decades.
Five. I don't know. It seems like it looked like it's been sitting there for a long time, but they just redid all that area about 5-7 years ago, something like that. And it looks really nice. All of this is ready for businesses to come in, but we don't have that happening. So, I mean, as a legislator, I don't want to take anything away from the county. So obviously that's their decision as to what goes in and what happens there. But I would be talking to the commissioners, to the councilmen, to people that are there trying to see what businesses do you want to come in here? Because I mean, that's a perfect place. That would be able to add 100 jobs. I don't know, however many could actually fit in that building. But if we could get that industrialized in that area, it's already set for it. We just need to actually get the businesses in. So have tax incentive packages that'd be able to bring these businesses in so we can hopefully get them in there. And
I think that's what the local EDC has been doing. Part of the probably issue with that spot there is kind of like with Henry County's first shell building.
Yes.
It was built specifically, and it was difficult to find somebody who needed that specific size, that specific. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, Boar's Head ended up purchasing it. But, you know, when you build an industrial park like that, you know, there's you're very specific as to what can go in there. What their needs.
I think a lot of times an industrial park like that ends up being almost like the model house. And that industrial park, while yes, it's there and it's available, Diamond Foods is going to build a 700,000 square foot facility right across from so a lot of the same infrastructure is complementary, right. And it's there.
Correct.
And that's where Walt's Kiln was looking to go, is where Diamond is actually going to locate. And I think that some of the investment that's come to Henry County was actually also considering that Rush County site as well.
Exactly.
Yes. You never know.
There's so many different specifics and specifications that each business needs. You know, it's great to look at and, you know.
You shoot your shot and eventually it's going to land, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And I think it's just a good example. It's one of those things where we know that Rushville is obviously seeking something because they just put a whole lot of money into making it look really nice, like when you drive through there.
You know why that happened? They got a massive state grant.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
They won the Stellar.
They
right?
won the $22 million Stellar.
Yeah, so that's going to happen. But I mean, we can see that they're obviously wanting that economic development. So I would talk to those commissioners and the councilmen and other people that would be involved in that the city and just make sure, like, hey guys, you want this to be here? We see that. Let's see what I can do as a state rep to be able to work alongside of you and get that statewide tax incentives to be able to come into your area, not just your county ones, because I'm all for getting businesses in this area. We need more. I'm all for helping develop this area. Not necessarily in that way. It would depend on what it is. But
as I've heard from business owners, I've heard a number of folks say, hey, look, we've got jobs available, but we don't have anywhere. We don't have any workers. We don't have anywhere for them to live. Housing's, you don't have new housing starts. Is that something you think is there's a responsibility as well?
I mean, there is a huge need for. I mean, when you see some of the houses going for what they're going for, where 5 years ago, 2 years ago, would not have gone for $20,000 over asking in their six figures, and they wouldn't have been a six figure price. Mm-hmm. We have a housing shortage.
Yes,
and we do need to work on. On that, whether at the state or local.
I think that's a part of economic development.
It is,
as well.
A part of economic development. You do have to have the housing. You do have to have the people. And we have to make an incentive for people to go back to work.
Yes, very much so. When COVID hit and they shut all these businesses down and people all went home, those unemployment packages that they were receiving were incentivizing people to stay home. I'm not saying everyone was taking it as an incentive to stay home, but there are a lot of people that did. What was it? $600, I think, on top of your base, top of your base unemployment. Mm-hmm. Yep. So just
I was
with
essential,
that alone,
so I had to keep working. I'm not sure.
I was essential. I had to keep working. I didn't get unemployment either.
Same. So it's one of those things where we can't be incentivizing people not to be working. So at the State House, I would try to eliminate all of those. I know that those have pulled back significantly since then. But even still, there's still some federal COVID money coming in because of that one bill that I talked about earlier that kind of got watered down and then passed through. When our governor ended the state of emergency, he did so with House Bill 1001. That was the bill that I had gone forth on the floor to speak about, try to talk to them about why this is important to pass and how it would protect people's freedoms and liberties. It went to the Senate, got very much watered down, went to the governor. He signed it into law that ended the state of emergency, but it continued the federal COVID money coming in from the federal government.
Right.
It kept all of that. And it basically codified his state of emergency powers to a certain extent. So that's one of those things where I would do all that I can to stop that, because we're incentivizing people to stay home with these packages. So we need to end that, and we need to get people back to work, because we can't just have a bunch of people sitting on that unemployment packages, on those unemployment packages for long terms.
And we're going to have a little bit of time to talk about the COVID response of the state here later in the conversation. Let's pivot over, Josh, to land use and how we haven't had a topic start with you yet. Mm-hmm. But do you view there being a role in the state to determine how land is used? If we're, you know, obviously the big topic in Henry County has been land, has been solar and wind, but we've also had discussions about how we locate asphalt plants and if we're going to have a go-kart track and all. It's been any number of different facilities and land use conversations. Is that the responsibility of the planning commissions and the commissioners? Should the state be getting involved? Because there was a big conversation in the last 2 years at the State House over taking some of that authority away from the locals. Where do you land?
So I always am going to strive to give local the say in their choices overall. And I'm going to say 99% of situations. I'd want to say 100%, but it's one of those things where I don't want to say that and then have someone come back and
be lesson plans.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where I'm going to say that 100% of the time, basically the county and the city is going to be able to make those decisions better than anyone else. They're the ones that are, they were voted in by the people in that district. They are the ones that are living in that district all the time. They see what's going on. And I would not want 99 other representatives, because I would be the only one that'd be living in the district. I don't want 99 other representatives telling me what's good for my district. I mean, that's just not right. We need to keep that local. Local needs to be making those decisions. In terms of wind and solar, I personally don't support both, either one of those. But it's one of those things where we need to keep that local. The city council members, the planning committees, they need to be the ones that make that final decision, because who knows the area better than them. So we need to keep that local.
All right. Bobby, you are the subject matter expert on this topic.
Yes, I have been under fire a little bit. So obviously, home rule will always reign for me. And for many people, because again, a one size fits all solution, what works in Marion County does not work in Henry County or Fayette County or Ohio County, or, I mean, let's just name.
There's 92 whatever. Of them.
Let's just name all. You want to see if I can figure them out, if I can remember all my counties?
Bartholomew, Allen.
Can I start alphabetically and move from there?
Adams.
So with, in the last, we had SB 535, we had HB 1381, and the bill this year has, the number has escaped me, what the number was this year. It was a Senate
bill. Was it 411?
Closer to your mic, Josh.
Was it Senate bill 411?
I think so. It just, the number escapes my brain.
I don't think we actually talked about it on the
show. It didn't become a law, the bill's dead now anyway, so it's all in the past, right?
It did. But what it does is it makes it optional this year. Next year, we'll see what they do. It makes it optional for counties to deem themselves basically renewable ready. And then if you deem yourself renewable ready, you must follow state sidings. And they're the same state. They're the same sidings that were going on 4 years ago, 5 years ago, six years ago. Again, I will always err on home rule because the locals know what's best for that county and how it could impact that county.
And it's important to note that District 54 and the redistricting, you would have four counties responsible for. We're very Henry County focused on this show.
Right, but it's Henry, Rush, Shelby, and Hancock. Yeah, so there's four counties in the district with the redistricting, portions of four counties. Because we don't have all of Henry County.
No, Stony Creek is
Stony Creek and half of Liberty.
Sent them away.
I know they just said, and then
one county in each is Shelby and Hancock. So
I mean, the planning commissions, the commissioners, actually the people, because you know how it went before. It was the people that stood up really and made their thoughts known.
So you're saying like. And I guess both of you guys are saying all these decisions need to be left up to local boards. However, both of you also said whenever it came to wind and solar, you were against them. Are you against them for where you are now, or are you against them on a statewide level?
I personally, I have said that wind and solar have their places. It is not conducive for Henry.
It's not a good fit.
It is not a good fit for Henry County. And I believe the citizens of Rush County spoke as well.
Yes.
It is not a good decision.
In my travels, I can see that there's significant signage regarding solar in Shelby County as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Shelby is,
I assume they're having their own local issues.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're having their own local issues.
Same for you, Josh.
I don't really know. I have not spoken to anyone that wants wind or solar. I personally don't think I've met anyone going door to door that has wanted that. And I've been to a lot of houses. Like I said, I think over 3,000 at this point. So
there are a couple, I promise.
Well, there definitely are. There definitely are. I've talked to them outside of campaigning, but while I'm campaigning specifically, I've not had anyone tell me they want wind and solar. So for me personally, I don't want wind and solar. So that is my personal opinion, not just in this area. I don't think that it's an efficient way to produce energy in general. The original expenses will hardly ever get outweighed. You're right. Not quite yet. So we're working towards that. But as she said, I just don't think it's beneficial for
policy,
this area.
Not encouraging wind or solar, but not prohibiting it, or what's...
I'm not going to prohibit it, because if the county or the city decides that that's what's best for them, then that's what they need to do. But I personally do not think that those are efficient ways yet to do that.
Now, I will tell you, the one thing that I do like is the small IMPA projects. The one at Spiceland, one's going in at Nicetown, one's going in at Middletown. They stay local. The power stays there. It's a small 5-10 acre.
And it
helps that municipality.
As far as I've seen, they've turned out to be pretty decent assets to their service areas.
They have. Yes. Absolutely have.
And I would be more okay with it if that energy was staying local. The issue is that a lot of the time it's not. Detroit, Chicago are getting
this energy. How do you know where it goes, man? Like it's all interconnected as a grid, right?
It is interconnected as a grid, but what they're saying, it's not necessarily directly benefiting this area. People aren't necessarily seeing those breaks in their electrical bills, and they're going up right now. We haven't seen those breaks locally is what I'm referring to. I guess we all hear that. You hear that all the time where it's going elsewhere. You're right. It's one big grid. But the issue is that we aren't seeing the benefits of these going in.
For example, the Bellflower Solar, you know, they have a power purchase agreement with Verizon right. Whenever that goes live.
Mm-hmm. But it's the same. It's all the same system, right? If there's a brownout in Cleveland, the power that's made here gets fed there. But if something happens with the peaking plant in Henry County, you're getting backfed from a wind farm up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan or whatever, or the thumb of Michigan. Yeah. It's all the same grid. I don't know. I'm trying to keep up and understand.
I was talking to someone at REMC because of some of the electrical work I was doing at the campground. And I know that as a result of where they get their energy from, they buy it from, I believe he said, somewhere down south, and I can't remember exactly where. And Gibson. Then that is specifically Gibson where it's brought up through here. So it's not coming from local. They buy it from Duke, and then that's REMC from
it makes
there to here.
Stops. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So yes. It's not like there's just a big run from the Gibson generating plant to Cadiz.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
feeding more than just this area. I'm just saying that's like we're specifically getting it from there. That's the trace it back. It's get it coming from there.
Right.
Now we do know that CAFOs are not a local decision.
Well,
CAFOs are a scorecard now, right?
Yeah, they're scorecard. Yeah, CAFOs are scorecard.
Yeah, they've taken some power away.
Yep.
But the county agreed to that.
Yes, the county did agree with that. Yeah. That was pre-me.
Yeah.
The county did agree to that.
The planning commission, and there was a process that was followed.
There was a process, correct.
And, you know, there's a scorecard that was developed, and that's the rule as of now. Could always
change. As of now.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to my day job.
Yeah.
Talk about some roads.
Roads.
City Councilman Jerry Walden wants an interchange at 103. So this is the Jerry Walden portion of the show where we've asked every candidate, the county commissioners, we've talked to all the state rep candidates, and we've talked about Bobby, except you're experiencing this now as a county commissioner, but how NDOT handles roads, the money that comes from the state and how it flows to the locals, any major investments that you think might be important from the state. Obviously, Representative Saunders sat on the Roads and Transportation Committee, so there was a lot of District 54 influence
Correct.
Regarding this issue historically.
Correct.
Do you have a road policy, a view on how the state should be interacting and where this should go?
I don't honestly have one, because honestly, roads and transportation, just being seated as a commissioner, the amount of time that I spend on roads here.
Potholes in February are, you've got to make your phone ring constantly.
Potholes.
February to March is freeze-thaw season.
Exactly.
It's the time of the year where you think we need a state of emergency for the flat tires that are going to happen.
And our highway department does a great job with what they've got.
Also, I'd like my road paved while you're still commissioner. If I can be put on your list.
Sure. let me get the map that is for 2022. Oh, yeah. Wait, you're not on it.
Didn't make the cut again.
Wait, you're not on it. Although we did get the million dollars.
I live next to some folks that have owned their house since 1968, and they've said that it's never been paved since the neighborhood went in. So
really?
They are still on OG asphalt in front of the houses over there.
Well, we did just get awarded the $1 million community crossings grant. So we'll have an extra $1 million.
We'll see where it goes.
Jeremiah, your road's in pretty good shape for being 60 years old.
Walking through there, it wasn't too bad to walk.
I run through there, and I don't recall it being a street that I have to like stare at the ground to not snap my ankle on. And there are some of those roads around. So stop complaining.
I'm just Mrs. Lovelace lives next to me, and I picked up the torch for her, and I said I'll make it a thing. I'll mention it because she's been there since the late 60s.
What road do you live on?
Jeffrey Street.
Okay.
Glorious Jeffrey, spelled. It's actually named after.
He's in the biohazard waste zone that they had to get their sewers fixed because they were dumping the crap.
It's in the high tax district of Henry Township. It's actually named after Jeff Razor, the local business.
Are they an R?
Yes.
Is it really? Yes. I did not know that.
Yep. It's named after him. So he is Jeffrey. Yeah.
He is Jeffrey.
Jeffrey. Huh.
Jeffrey of Jeffrey Street.
Of Jeffrey Street. Now, it is spelled wrong. It's not spelled the way his name is, but it was. Yeah. I'm sure at some point, some commissioner in the 60s just spelled it wrong, and we've been living with it ever since.
Wow. Interesting.
So anyway, any thoughts on NDOT plans on widening I-70 through the entire eastern part of the state?
I would like to know why NDOT keeps redoing between Greenfield and Mount Comfort or Nicetown and Mount Comfort about every 2 years.
Yes.
And that is my main question, actually. Honestly, no, I don't.
All right.
I'm not. I mean, I could sit here and
any thoughts on the 103 interchange?
103 interchange. I don't believe the state will do it. As a matter of fact, a discussion was had with the state, and it's not even on their radar. With the three interchanges that we currently have that are not completely developed, I don't think that it's a good move.
Right.
Once the other three interchanges are developed and we see traffic flowing through here and we can't handle it all and we need another interchange, absolutely. But I just don't think we're at that point right now. And Jerry knows my position on that.
All right.
Love Jerry Walden.
We have certain folks. We picked up the torch and we asked these questions for people, and we'll see where
Democrat.
They go.
Is that why he's a Democrat?
You know, all the Republicans have said.
Yeah. Love Jerry, and we just disagree on this.
All right, Josh, what do you say about my roads?
So I also don't necessarily support the investment of that money into an exchange at the Highway 103 overpass right there.
Somebody might put a campground in over there.
Yeah.
Can't have that competition.
Yeah. Oh, no. That'd be bad. No.
I mean, it might be easy access for folks coming from Ohio to visit a campground, too.
Maybe.
That's a lot of possibilities.
That's true. I just encourage them to go to exit 123, get off of there, take a right on 500, and there's a great campground right there for them. Yes, yes. No, I don't necessarily support that because, as Bobby was saying, the rest of them aren't fully developed yet. We still have plenty of room around the 123 exit or at the Knightstown exit, or we could keep developing those. So I wouldn't support that. As for roads, I also can't say that I necessarily have a public policy completely done, because you would need to work with NDOT, local, state funding for that. There's just so many things that would go into that. I would like to say I would love to see our I-70 expanded to a third lane. So I can't say that would be bad, but I can't give any public statement as to, oh, I want this to be done or this to be done to get that.
The last item that we probably need to touch on the road topic is one that I know we got into with the last round of 54 candidates. There was a proposal that came from a number of members of the General Assembly saying we need to suspend the gas tax for a period of time because we need to provide relief to folks because gas. Right, once again, we've got another 40-cent increase this week. We're back around $4 a gallon again.
Yes.
Any support or appetite for that, Josh?
Definitely. With an additional $5 billion or more in surplus that we have currently in the State House right now in reserves, I would be all in favor of suspending temporarily that gas tax, hopefully reducing it at some point because I'm all for reducing all taxes. So that I can definitely say. But we have a $5 billion surplus right now in this state. I would like to see that gas tax suspended at least until the gas prices start to come down.
So is there a metric or a dollar figure you think is appropriate?
For what are you referring to? Like how much gas tax to remove?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, if you say, okay, we're going to suspend it. So you're going to say it's $4 now. So you say, okay, if it provides 40 cents a gallon in relief, if the gas price drops to $3 a gallon, that's when you bring it back. Or what would, you know, I assume if you're suspending something, it wouldn't be indefinite.
No, it wouldn't be indefinite. It would just be a temporary, probably more of a timeline, not necessarily once gas hits $1.50 a gallon, then we'll add that tax back on.
We reassess in 3 months.
I was about to say, because it's always better, in my opinion, to make a shorter term decision if you don't have to make a long term decision, because when you start trying to do that, less people are going to be on board with it. It's one of those things to negotiate issues for longer term issues. You need to be able to say, okay, this is our compromise. We're going to do this for 3 months. We're going to do this for 6 months, as opposed to taking it 2 years. No one's going to support a gas tax suspension of 2 years because that is what funds our roads. So we can't get rid of it outright forever, but we could at least suspend it for a short period of time to give some reprieve to these high gas prices until Biden decides to get his head on straight, which we know won't happen, and open up the pipeline and make us energy independent again. But that won't happen under this administration. So,
Commissioner Plummer, any thoughts on suspending gas tax?
While it would be lovely on a personal level, you have to figure out a way to how to backfill what you lose at the local level, because obviously the county is funded by a portion of that gas tax. So suspending the gas tax will hurt the funding at the local level. So what are you going to do to backfill that? So you don't want to yes, you help people by removing the gas tax, but do you cause more problems at the local level in the road funding?
And then are they thanking you for suspending the gas tax, but then yelling at you
because your roads are bad?
Yeah.
It cuts both ways.
It does. It cuts both ways. And so you have to kind of be, you know, you have to be mindful of anytime you cut a tax. I mean, everybody wants to cut tax, but then what services, what product, you know, what has to be reduced or go away to counterbalance that cut in tax?
3 years ago, the General Assembly increased the gas tax for the first time, and I think since around the year 2000, and they indexed it to inflation. So it automatically adjusts to keep, theoretically, I'm using quotes here, to keep it level, to keep funding level. So and it's essentially a user tax, right? Mm-hmm. The more miles you drive,
the more you pay. Trust me, I pay a lot of gas tax.
I'm there with you.
Right now.
I'm there with you.
I pay a lot of gas
tax. How many miles am I driving this weekend, Zach? My 1,600-mile round-trip journey?
Yeah, actually like 1,700. Oh,
God. Yeah, but barely any of that's going to be here.
Oh,
yeah,
I'll fill my jerry cans up in Henry County, and I'll make it. Don't you worry.
Yeah. You can rig them up a cannonball fuel set up. The whole back of the car is just gas. How many stops did you make?
None. Boy, did I have a pissed-off wife at the end of the trip.
This is all Henry County fuel.
The good stuff.
I mean, there are folks that testified when it went through that, hey, this is a user tax. Mm-hmm. By the way, CAFE standards are making cars more efficient, which means that you don't have as much money going back to pay for these roads. And hey, by the way, my solar-powered car
doesn't pay gas taxes. Correct.
So you're starting to hear chatter of people going, hey, I bought this electric car. Now, why the hell do I have this EV fee on my registration? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of once one of you wins the seat and has to deal with this. There's a lot of this you're going to hear about from the state.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a constant issue. So
it's all about negotiation. I mean, truly, we have that $5 billion surplus that's being stored there right now. I don't believe that our state needs a $5 billion surplus. So we could use that to help pad those pockets until pad those funds. Sorry, not pockets. Never pad the pockets. That's a bad thing. No, that is a bad thing. I think the establishment altogether. Do not
you're
think
for
that.
The phrase to be provide relief yes, to the family.
Thank
right?
you. That is exactly what I mean. Do not pad the pockets. Anti-establishment all the way. I'm catching myself before someone else did.
Josh is self-editing.
Yes, before anyone else picks that up and says something about it. So
man, might get a mailer.
Yeah. 16 of them between now and
I've got a collection over there, by the way. It's been fun.
Yeah. All 16 from one or two candidates.
I've got at least four.
Yeah.
So far and counting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. Oh, Dakota, this is you. This is your favorite topic, so I'm going to let you suffer through it.
COVID-19. I'm sick of talking about it, to be honest with you.
Me too.
I feel like we've had a reprieve the last few months where haven't really had to think about it. But it was a big deal. 2020, my son was born in the end of February 2020, and I remember it being a very big deal then. So we had the pandemic happen. Governor Holcomb issued a statewide state of emergency due to everything, and we started seeing mask mandates in places. We all heard the 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Do you guys support the actions that the state took as far as COVID-19 regulations? Do you think we waited too long? What did we do too little? Did we do too much? What could we have done differently? All those things. Let's start with you, Josh, on this since you brought it up earlier.
So I do think that in the beginning, the governor had some reason to be able to do that. I think that he waited an adequate amount of time. We were told 2 weeks to flatten the curve, as you were saying. We're going to do this so we can help protect 4 million people or whatever, however many people they said were going to die from this. And I think he had good intentions in the beginning. I think that very quickly after that, we saw that this was more than just an illness going around, more than just a virus going around. And this exposed a lot of cracks in our government that were easily exposed during COVID. We lost freedoms. We lost liberties. We lost a lot of what I would say makes us American. And like I was saying earlier, our churches were shut down. That's a First Amendment violation. Businesses were shut down. Some people were told that they are essential. Others were told they're non-essential. I don't think that is a fair differentiation in America. All of us are essential because without one another running our country, it will crumble. And we saw that kind of happen. So I think that in the beginning, he was okay doing that, but after a certain amount of time, he needed to end that state of emergency way earlier than he did. He extended that for 23 consecutive months. So, I mean, as for me, to make sure that doesn't happen again, I would want to make sure that as a state legislator, I would go in and say, okay, Governor, you have 3 months with the state of emergency before you need to go to the state House of Representatives and the state Senate, and then they will be able to give you that power to continue after that time frame, because we cannot have him taking the freedoms away for long periods of time like that again. And, that's primarily one of the reasons that I decided to run, was to support and defend those freedoms. So for me, this is a very, very big issue. Cannot happen again. We can never allow the governor, or anyone for that matter, but specifically in Indiana, the governor to take that control again. One man does not have that power to say, you cannot go to work, you cannot live your life. And then when I saw people losing their jobs as a result of declining to get the COVID vaccination, you cannot violate someone's bodily autonomy specifically because of what? A virus that we were told 2 weeks is going to stop it, then a mask is going to stop it, then the vaccine is going to stop it. No, this was a power grab. And although you said that we're sick and tired of talking about it, I am too. I think everyone is. We need to continue talking about this because we cannot forget the freedoms that we lost, and we cannot forget the injustice that was done during this time.
So your view on any kind of mandates, like mask mandates and things like that, is it a hard no?
Wholeheartedly against them altogether.
Gotcha.
Strictly volunteer, essentially?
If you want to do something, go ahead and do it, but do not force any one person to do it, especially if you're going to be kicking them out of their job.
So if every individual gets to decide, or say I own a store, I say if you're coming into my restaurant, my store, you need to wear the mask or else you're not welcome here.
Yeah. You as a business owner would have that right. Cause once again, I'm talking little mom and pop shops. I'm not talking big Walmarts or big other distribution plants like that, that are very much
corporate.
You are corporate. You are not under this same protection. But for the mom and pop shops, the local restaurant, the whatever it may be, you have the right to do that if you want. You have the right to say, okay, you are going to wear a mask in here, otherwise you can't shop here. That's where free enterprise comes in.
But Kroger doesn't have that right.
I mean, at least in this city, did they kick you out for not wearing one? I don't think so.
I said, look, that people, you know, when Walmart put the sign up, that was when people's opinions changed of holy crap, we're taking this serious right now, because we had this conversation on the show, Dakota.
Because Walmart
When Walmart set went up, we went, oh boy.
Yep.
We knew something bad was happening. Everybody's doing this.
Yes.
So I guess I'm asking, from the state, you're saying that if you were a state legislator, you would support a guy that has a store that has five employees being able to say everybody that comes in here has to wear a mask because I'm protecting my employees, but not at Walmart or Kroger. They don't have like, that autonomy.
Are you saying like, I guess you can clarify, but I think that I understand what you're saying as far as like Kroger or Walmart.
Those are corporate entities that are publicly traded. They're very big organizations that have, to a certain extent, they've not given up their own liberties and freedoms, but they don't have the same freedoms that the owner of Los Amigos may have. I mean, that's a very local, that is him owning that business. He can do what he wants with his employees at that location. Now,
family can't for Walmart.
No, I can't, you are receiving federal money to a certain extent. So you can go ahead and mandate that, but mandating someone to do that and then forcing someone out of their job is two very different issues, in my opinion. So, I mean, I'm all for elimination of the mandates altogether. I am not going to go to the state house and say that it's going to be an easy decision on how to legislate, because to draw that line is going to be very hard. I mean, it is going to be so hard to do. I spoke on the state floor and I had organizations backing me. And when I said that I do not always support the individual's bodily autonomy, because at certain points I want to always support that person's bodily autonomy, but those small businesses, if you say I want to vaccinate my employees, I can't stop you from doing that at that local level, because it's your rights that are there. You have your business rights just like someone else.
Right.
So I need to be able to protect both.
This is like the PETA sign where it's like, where do you draw the line? Right. Yes. Like, so you're saying like 50 employees. So it's like between rabbits and ducks. What's the number?
Publicly traded, federally subsidized.
Sure. Yes. Very much so, because there is a difference. And I think a lot of people understand that. But if any small business wants to run their business in a way that they say, okay, you have to be vaccinated to work here, I don't feel I can stop that small business, but what I can say is if people as a whole do not like that decision, don't shop there.
Right.
Use your buying power. Options. Use your buying power to go elsewhere until they change those decisions, because it's a business. They will change if you start, okay, I don't like this. That's not my job as a state representative to be able to legislate them. But I will say that as a person, I will not shop somewhere. I will not go to eat somewhere. I will not do these things at places that do not value my opinions. So I will make sure that when it comes time to do that, I'm not going to shop there. And if more people did that, the rules and the laws would change altogether, basically, because
folks using free association.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Free enterprise will run a lot more than any business or any governmental organization ever could.
All right. Bobby, let's hear from you. We spent a lot of time with Josh on this subject and you've been waiting patiently.
I've been waiting patiently. At the beginning of the pandemic, I think we were all afraid because of the unknown. I'll say 8 weeks before I was like, I am not going to live my life in fear.
I think you were one of the first back in-person episodes we had in here.
In
April or May of 2020.
I think so.
Because we had the mask, the little mask dance ourselves in here trying to decide what the hell we were going to do.
It was me, Betsy, and Susan.
I think so.
Was it me as a candidate? No, 2020. That was me as a candidate.
Yeah,
that was me as a candidate.
And we all had the microphones.
Yes, we did. We were doing the best we could. Yeah, I think we kind of did one of these things. And, but after about 8 weeks, I decided I'm not living my life in fear. But I also made the statement, no judgment to those who were fearful. If you wanted to wear a mask, if you didn't want to leave your home, I mean, whatever, basically you do you.
Yep. Right.
Whatever makes you comfortable.
Personal circumstance.
Correct. Yeah. You do you, I do me. Obviously, if somebody said, hey, I don't want you to come to my house, or if you come to my house, I want you to wear a mask, or, you know, I would abide by whatever their wishes were. my clients were dentists. They were basically completely shut down during the pandemic. They weren't technically shut down. They were restricted with the amount of procedures.
They were down to emergencies only.
They were down to emergencies only. So basically they were shut down. So I personally suffered with my business from the pandemic. So do I think that the executive order went too long? I do. I think it should have been lifted, although I believe he is constitutionally allowed to.
You know, a funny thing about getting elected state rep is you get to change that if you want to.
I know, by constitutional amendment. But yeah, he is constitutionally, I mean, he was within his constitutional rights to do exactly what he did, whether I agree with it or not. I do believe that it went way too long. I believe that at some point it should have been looked at. Kind of, you do you, whatever makes you comfortable. I still, today at Community North, I still had to put a mask on. Did I like it? Yeah. Nope. Did I wear it? Yep.
Medical setting, right?
Medical setting. Yeah. Some of my dental offices are still requiring masks. Do I like it? Nope. If I'm going to go in there and charge you money, I'm going to put a mask on. I support actual mandates? No. Again, a business can do whatever they want, and I can choose whether or not I want to go there.
Any size.
A business of any size. I can choose to, if I choose to go to Walmart, great. If they require a mask, if they don't require a mask and I choose to go or not go, that's fine. Again, I choose based upon my dollar, you know, where I want to go to spend my money. So, vaccine mandates. I don't like the fact that people are losing their jobs over the vaccine mandates, especially since we see now that it's a vaccine and several boosters.
Right.
But if you want to get it, absolutely. If you want to get 12 boosters, knock yourself out. You do you, I do me, and even at the state level. I mean,
I'm getting a you own your body, you take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Personal responsibility, big personal responsibility person. I do believe, I don't want to knock people for the decisions that were made because it was unknown. There was a lot of unknown for quite a while, and there was a lot of conflicting information coming out, and nobody really knew what was going on. And so I think the intentions, people were well-intentioned in a lot of the decisions that were being made, whether it was here locally, at the state level, or at the federal level. I think at the beginning it was very well-intentioned. But I think it did go on a little too long.
All right. Couple other issues that we want to work through here. Bobby, we'll stick with you. The idea of food and beverage tax, Henry County's got one. There was some legislation that may have taken it away. Mm-hmm. Turns out that didn't actually happen yet, but it's still on the horizon as possibly happening.
Right.
Anecdotally, we've had this running joke that this is the most popular tax in the history of taxes, where we have almost universal community excitement and support of the food and beverage tax and this debate that's happened over the last few months as to how it's going to get awarded, what's going to happen with it. Mm-hmm. What are your views on Indiana having this, individual counties being able to use it? Should it be sunset? Where do you come down?
I am a fiscal conservative, but the food and beverage tax does help local communities with economic development, tourism, and a lot of things. Obviously, the Hall of Fame wouldn't have been built without the food and beverage tax. We wouldn't have been able to do the money that went to business loan resiliency fund during the pandemic to help businesses that we took that the council, not we, me, commissioner, we council, gave to the that fund. So I like that tax. It's one that nobody ever. I would imagine that many, until this whole conversation about spending of the food and beverage, many people did not realize that they were charged an additional penny when they went and bought a Coke or bought food.
Right. Yep.
That they probably didn't even know it. And then it's been going on for
since the 80s.
Very long time.
I think 87, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's somewhere in the 80s. I don't remember the exact date.
I think the Hall of Fame opened in 88. So yeah, 87, 88, somewhere in that range.
Somewhere around in there. And
I would have been 4 years old if it was 87 and living in New York. So I can't take responsibility for this tax.
Same. I was 13 years before I was even born.
Dakota, when were you born? Just tell me.
January 1st, 1996. First baby of the new
year. Don't you hate him?
1987, I was 2 years out of college. But that's all right.
I have a wide array.
I was really doing good to ride a bicycle in 1987. Yeah,
1987, 2 years out
I was
of
probably wreaking havoc.
Yeah. But
producer Zach was, Chris Guffey would say producer Zach was, I think, 32 at the time.
Yeah, and he'd be incorrect. I was old enough. I have a brick there, and my parents paid for it because I was not old enough to be buying bricks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I am officially the oldest person in the room. Okay. And that's
fine. The fact that you looked at me and you're like, I wonder. very much Staten is in the chat and he is falling out of his chair laughing.
Yes.
Zach was in fact born in the 80s, everybody. But he's got two children and
children age you.
And he is aging
at
an alarming rate.
Yes, children
especially
age
his
you.
Kids.
Children age you. But
wow, okay.
With the food and beverage.
I spend a lot of quality time with Jackson and Owen, okay? I'm all in, but Zach has earned every gray hair.
There you go.
Every wrinkle.
You know, there's a lot of counties that want food and beverage taxes and cannot get it. I would like to see at the state level to open it up that if you want food and beverage tax, you've got it. You don't have to jump through the hoops and
essentially, the communities have to kiss the ring of the state.
Correctly, and I don't think that that's correct. I think we should open it up to if you want it, absolutely. You know, if you don't, that's fine too. Because I do know that there are counties that have tried to get food and beverage.
Rushville, Rush County has attempted, and it's not happened.
Yeah, it's not happened. So, I'm sorry, I forgot all of the question because we got off on a tangent.
Food and beverage.
Yeah, and hopefully we get it all figured out where the rest of the money is going to go. We, council, not a commissioner's decision.
The county.
Yeah.
You're saying the county.
We, the county, but it's a council decision. The commissioners don't have a decision.
You don't get to pull those strings?
The only decision, we have some part of it with the decision of the bonding, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Josh, talk to me about food and beverage, man. Does it help out a campground in the south side of the county at all?
We definitely have people pay that tax all the time. That's that extra percent that she was referring to on everything that we sell from our cafe. So people definitely have been paying that. I don't know if they actually know that, like she was saying. It's very small, and it does fund locally. I, as a fiscal conservative, am not going to say that I like any tax. But this does help the local communities be able to fund themselves and be able to fund what they need that extra surplus for when it comes to it. But I am going to say that when I get to the state house, this is probably going to be taxes across the board. This isn't just the food and beverage. I'll get back to that in just a second. But I want to look at where all of the tax money is going, because for us to have that $5 billion surplus, I'm glad that we're not spending more than we have. And I wouldn't want to spend more as the state. But I want to be able to get money back to the people in this state because of that big surplus, i.e. tax reductions, tax other things, use that $5 billion somehow to be able to at least show that, oh, we've taxed you, now we've used it. Let's not just keep that going.
So the automatic tax rebate that I think it's taken like 13 months to get your $125 bucks back or whatever.
Yes.
You want to make
some
changes with that program.
Well, yes, I would want to make changes with that program. Not necessarily through that, though. I mean, we have the $5 billion. We have lots of expenses. And our counties are hurting. I mean, look at our counties individually. We need to get that money back to them. They need to at least back to local. I'm not saying that we need to use it. I'm just saying that $5 billion cannot be sitting there in the backseat just waiting to be used for a rainy day surplus fund. We need to get that back to the county so they could be using that. Henry County, Rush County, Shelby County, and Hancock County could all benefit a lot from receiving that back to be able to fund their roads, to be able to fund different things. So I would need to look at all the taxes across the board because I want to cut taxes. And when I say that, that's not an easy decision because that is a statewide, everything would need to be altered. So I'm not going to sit here and say I know exactly what that's going to look like. But overall, I would want to make sure that I can reduce taxes as much as possible and reduce that burden on people as much as possible because – I mean, no one wants to pay taxes, and it's a necessary evil that needs to be there, and we need to be able to fund everything locally, statewide. But I would need to look at that across the board to say, okay, what can be pulled from, what needs to be kept, how are we going to help the counties the most, how are we going to help be able to have the state and the counties work together so that we're not putting a burden on either one of them. So
this is going to be a fun transition, Dakota. You ready?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Bill Levin, the Grand Poobah, the first Cheers of Cannabis, another Boss Hog alum.
Don't we have a bobblehead somewhere?
I think there is a bobblehead of Bill Levin over in the
or an action figure in the corner.
He went to the state house and said, "Hey, you know how you can solve a lot of this tax issue? You can legalize cannabis and tax it, and there's your money right there." We've asked this question of every candidate for state representative. We've talked to the prosecutor candidates. We talked to all the sheriff's candidates. Two-part question, Josh. Do you have any appetite for support of medicinal and or recreational cannabis in the state of Indiana?
Individually, I'm going to say no, but that's something that medicinally I could see. In terms of an outright allowance of it, I can't see myself supporting that. Unless we had some 70-80% poll that was from almost everyone at like a voting center saying, "Hey, do you actually want this as a community?" You know, if I could see that many people saying that they wanted it, I would have more consideration for the overall allowance of it. But what I will say is that I personally would not want to legalize cannabis outright, medicinally, but it would be controlled just like an opioid or something else under basically those same standards.
I think the last point I saw, we were in the upper 60s for recreational, but 91% for medicinal across the state of Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at the map of Indiana, and Michigan's got recreational.
Yes,
Ohio has got
we're
some component.
An island.
Yeah, you're essentially surrounded by folks that drive to Coldwater or drive just across I-74.
They've all got the devil's lettuce.
Where it's happening, it's just a matter of whether or not the state's involved. Bobby, yes. I know you've been thinking about this one. Coming up with your answer, your slick political answer. Let's go.
I support medicinal, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would support recreational if everyone in the district wanted it, because that's what a representative does.
Everybody?
Well, not everybody.
Well, you said everybody.
Yes, I did, but a high percentage.
Because I can find one fuddy-duddy that's going to say no.
A high percentage of.
Probably my mother-in-law should say no just to spite
51%.
Me.
51%.
But I will say, I will put caveats to this because, as a state legislator, you have to look at these other things. Okay, so how is it going to be regulated? Mm-hmm. What are the standards going to be for either, OWI, where we have these standards for alcohol and for some other things? There's more to it than just saying – legalize recreational marijuana. Talking to some local law enforcement, I know that they are not necessarily for that, but I would absolutely look at it, if we get a high percentage, because as a representative, you represent the wants of your district. But I do believe that there needs to be some other things in there. You can't just say, let's legalize marijuana and everybody just doing whatever. There has to be some regulation. There has to be some,
In the last week, we've seen a number of veterans groups come out and say, "Hey, the American Legion, other organizations, people from all political parties, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian." Mm-hmm. I think Jim Merritt, who was the last candidate for mayor of Indianapolis, former state senator, he was standing at an event alongside of Tom Hammett. Is it Tom Hammett who's running for U.S. Senate as a Democrat? Former mayor, Tom McDermott, former mayor of Hammond. There's the Hammond. We were searching. We got there. But this big group came together and, they're all saying, "Hey, we want to do this for the people." They're asking us for it. And, there's zero chance 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
That's right.
I think we're getting closer. Debate, talking to the Republican candidates and getting a yes and maybe. Mm-hmm. This conversation has moved so far so quickly.
Mm-hmm. It has.
I appreciate you guys listening.
Now, my personal view on marijuana is completely, would I ever
but that's
do
what
no.
a good Republican has to exactly. say. I tried it once in the 70s, didn't like it.
No, didn't even try it once in the 70s. Yeah, didn't,
that's,
you know,
that's,
didn't
the,
even,
that's the Republican yeah, answer. And that's, you have to say it the Lincoln days, what, I understand. No,
that's what Democrat vice president candidates say.
Yes.
I tried it once and I enjoyed it, and then I arrested and jailed people who did it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and like she's saying, I don't want it to be something that's legalized because I personally just don't see it as something that's necessary. But once again, you had said
you and your body,
10 years
right?
ago,
that was the autonomy conversation
exactly.
we just had.
10 years ago, this would never have been a conversation. But as a representative, we do need to represent the beliefs that the people in our district hold. And if that's something that they feel strongly enough about, that is something that we need to really look into and really consider doing, because once again, we represent the people. No matter what our beliefs are, there's going to be something that
we probably don't like that we're going to have to support at some point because our constituents want it. And I personally am going to make sure that I stand true to what I say. I've said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And I want to make sure that happens. But if I don't like something, that can't be the only reason that I don't vote for it if a very large majority of people in my district want it. But even outside of that, I mean, I don't think that this is necessarily is a hot button issue, but it's not something that is, I didn't start this saying I'm going to run on fighting marijuana legalization or fighting it from happening. I think it comes up every year
at the State House.
Yep.
It's one of those topics that comes up every year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, laugh all you want, everybody, but he got his concealed gut carried thing. It's done. It's state law this time. So
it is done.
You know, four years ago, it was also a chuckle. And
It's finally time we get back to our constitutional rights with that one.
Hey, yeah. Does the Constitution say you can't have a plant? Checking right now. Doesn't mention it.
George Washington grew him, so.
Okay.
Let's talk, Bobby. You have been endorsed by Tom Saunders in this campaign, and Tom had carried and brought forth a bill dealing with straight ticket voting in the state of Indiana. Is the elimination of straight ticket voting in Indiana something that you would support?
You know what? I haven't really given it much thought, but thinking about straight ticket voting,
we are one of eight states left.
We are.
That's it.
Yeah. Yes, we are one of eight states. I would consider it. I personally don't have never straight ticket voted. I leave blanks on my ballot.
Yeah, but you know what happens with our new voting machines when you do that?
I know it says you did an
error.
It
says you made a mistake.
And then you have to go back and look at it.
And it tells the 78-year-old lady who struggles with her phone and says, oh, darn, I didn't pick a party. Let me go back. And then it conveniently fills in every Democrat, Republican, or Libertarian on the ballot.
And that does need to be changed. As an old programmer, it's not that hard to change. I would not think. Now,
I haven't programmed it a long time.
Voting machine.
I would not oppose taking away straight ticket voting because I don't straight ticket vote. And most of the people that I know don't straight ticket vote. Would it have confused my dad? Yes. Would it confuse my mom who absentee ballots?
Yeah.
I can see where it would be confusing where, you know, me who's worked in technology for
a minute,
you go, okay, whatever, and move on. But, I wouldn't be opposed to looking at that.
But you're not going to be the one to carry the bill like Tom.
I could carry the bill.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
You got a firm maybe.
Firm maybe. Well, you know, I do tell people, and I've said this to Tom, and I'll say it publicly now. I'm not Tom Saunders, even though he endorsed me. I'm not Tom Saunders 2.0. He knows that. I know that.
The signs look familiar, though. Yellow and blue. Those will look a lot like the last signs I used, too. It could be me you're copying.
Well,
I don't know.
If you look, those are my commissioner design. Just change the color.
All right.
Change the color. Change the words.
Listen, I like the yellow and blue.
Yeah, yellow and blue. I knew everybody else was going to be doing red.
Good sign. Oh, yeah, yellow and blue there.
Yeah, yellow and blue there.
Took a chance and said, don't think I'm a Democrat.
Yeah. I am not Tom Saunders 2.0. Tom and I don't agree on everything. And we're still friends because we can do that. You know, you can, in a world of where we're tribal and if you don't agree with me, you're wrong and you're dead to me.
You know, you run out of friends real quick if you think that way on everything.
I know, but we can agree to disagree and still be friends.
But maybe you'll carry the bill.
Oh, sure.
All right. Sure. Josh, what do you say, my guy?
I'll have him pull it out of his library and I'll just take it to him.
Copy and paste.
Yeah, copy and paste.
So I'd be all in favor of eliminating straight ticket voting. I mean, I think that that's something that if you're voting for people, you need to know who that is. You need to be clicking on their name. You need to be saying, okay, this is who it is. And I think that a lot of people in our society are complacent with that. They just, oh, Republican, check, go, done. And that's not right. I mean, obviously, I'd like every vote to be Republican.
The wide variety of Republicans in this race.
Yeah. Right?
Just because you're a Republican doesn't mean that you're getting
correct. Exactly.
You guys are a spectacular representation of the different views inside of the GOP.
Mm-hmm. And I will have to say here, and I know I'm probably jumping the gun, the bad thing is there's not one candidate that I don't like.
Not one? You can't squeeze one out you don't like?
Well, I've talked to all of you guys.
Personally, I don't
one.
Like them. I mean, it's not one of those things where personally, I'm not going to have an issue with anyone. Like I'll be friends with everyone.
Hey, Jeff, did you hear what you said? Personally, I don't like them.
Oh, that's not what I meant.
That's where you want that edit again,
yeah,
Josh.
Yeah, we're going to do another self-edit here. That is not what I meant. Of the other 7 people running for this district, I don't have an issue with them personally. That is what I meant
there
to say.
There he is.
There
that's
you
it.
Go.
No,
there
no.
You go.
Politically,
line
yeah,
in those
no.
pockets with people he doesn't like.
Yeah, oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, no. No, I have nothing wrong with them personally. Like, we can all be friends, as she was saying. I don't like people's policies. Like, I will say that even within those running, I don't like some of the policies that people
are going
to
support. Sure, we all can't agree on everything.
Yeah. And I'm going to definitely say, like, there are people I would absolutely never vote for that are running for this seat. So, I mean, honestly, that is something that I would have. But
you got to use your mic.
Oh, sorry.
Listen, you're a county commissioner. You know about this open door crap now, Bobby. You've got to use the microphone.
Got to use the microphone. Yeah.
We've learned our lesson, I hope to God.
Yeah. No, but. Back to the voting issue, though. No, I would support making sure that everyone actually has to like choose their individual
the stove
candidates.
Is hot.
And that's who you need to. That's how you need to do it. You can't have someone just going in saying this is who I want to vote for just because they're a Republican. You need to make sure that it's going this is who I want, and then choosing them by name. I mean, I think we need a lot of. We need to be checking for any kind of voter irregularities. We need to be checking for all that, and I don't want there to be any room left for error. You choose who you want. You do not straight ticket vote.
What
that,
if we
that
just
can't
did,
happen?
What if we just did names? No more R, D, or L by their names.
That would then really mess up a lot of people because I mean, think of it this way. Only 6,000, I'm being generous with that number. It's like 55,000 some odd amount of people voted in the last primary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 5,500.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was generous with 6,000 because I couldn't remember the number in the 5,000s.
Yeah.
But there were only 5,500 people that voted in the last election. There are close to 70,000 people now that they redistricted. I don't actually know the exact number, but I think it's close to 70,000 people that are in this district. And that means that of those 70,000, what, 45,000 can actually vote? I don't know the number, so I'm just going to say 45,000. That means that 5,500 of 45,000 people are voting. There are many issues that we have with that. Like, people need to be involved in politics. People need to be letting their voices be heard. And if we are to eliminate that, and I don't think that's going to help people because they don't actually pay attention. They vote. Right. They vote based on party a lot of the time. A lot of the voters that I know. I mean, and it's one of those things where I walk up to someone's door and, "Hi, I'm Josh Gilmore. I'm running for blah blah blah." Tell them my spiel, all this stuff, and they say, "Oh, well, I'm a Republican. I'll vote for you." And I'm like, "There's 8 people running on the Republican ticket. This is the primary. Kind of have to explain how this works." And I think that can go back to education reform from earlier. We need to be teaching governmental how to be involved in government from a voter's level. And if you decide to go on later, like, that needs to be taught because people aren't understanding the power that they have in their vote. And that's part of the reason I want to make sure we get rid of the straight ticket voting, because I think it's just a easy check the box, be done with it, instead of an actual you're accountable for who you vote for.
The reality of the law is that if you vote in the Republican primary, mm-hmm. or the Democrat primary, the letter of the law says that you intend as a voter to vote for the majority of that candidate's people mm-hmm. in the fall.
Correct. Yes.
That is what the law as written mm-hmm. says.
Yes.
So Indiana says it's a closed primary.
Right.
So if you say, "Hey, I'm going to vote in the Democrat primary, but the Democrat the next time," there's never been a prosecution. There's not going to be a prosecution. No. But the way that the laws and the rules are stacked mm-hmm. is that the Republicans, Democrats get voter information that's paid for by the state of Indiana. Uh-huh. And they say, "Here's your list of all the people that are going to vote Democrat or all the people that are going to vote Republican." Meanwhile, Libertarians, when they have a convention, they pay for it themselves, and they do it just like when the GOP picks their uh-huh. Secretary of State
exactly.
candidate.
With delegates.
That's when it happens with delegates. Uh-huh. Instead, the taxpayers pay to decide, "Hey, is Josh or Bobby going to be a delegate to go decide?"
Well, and that's a whole other question. Do we need to have a closed primary or open primary?
Right.
Which – my personal opinion is open.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, the it's an amazing thing when you're in power, which you can decide your, mm-hmm. the rules are. You
right.
set the rules.
Open.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's enough of this and what we have programmed. This is where we start to work into final thoughts. This could take 3 minutes. This could take another 25. Zach Burcham, you've got the floor, man. You've been listening from a distance. Is there anything that you heard that you wanted to have clarified? Any questions you got?
No,
you need to promote.
I'm already frustrated just at the thought of it punishing me for not voting straight ticket in the fall, because that is the most frustratingly dumb, not glitch in a computer system that I recall ever. Mm-hmm. Because it literally is like, oh, there's a problem. You should have voted. And like, no, yeah. No, I don't have an AARP card. I don't vote straight ticket. And I don't punish me for this.
We covered that on the show. The data literally showed here was the number of people in 2016 that voted straight ticket versus
lot.
The new equipment and the incredible spike in straight ticket voting in 2018.
It was either almost doubled or it was really close to doubling the amount of people that
phenomenal.
And I think that eliminates some responsibility from the voter. Like, you aren't just picking this person's name. Like, when on May 3rd, everyone votes for me and I win this election, when that happens, it's something
dreaming.
That
he's still gotta dreaming. Win the election. Yeah. He's dreaming.
No, when that happens, though, it's one of those things where you need to be choosing who you're voting for. And if you are just hitting a button that says, I'm going to pick all Republican, you're not being directly responsible for, okay, Josh Gilmore or Bobby Plummer or whoever you do decide to vote for. You then don't necessarily feel like you had as much of a say, I don't think.
Well,
like,
there's some responsibility as a voter.
Yes, yes.
And if you just vote, you hit one button and just let a computer decide the rest of the ticket for you or punch out whatever.
Did my duty, give me my sticker.
Yeah, that's not taking responsibility. Because there are times where I look at a race and I'm like, especially when I was younger, I was like, I don't know. Like when I was in college, I'd come home and like, I don't know. So I'd
you left
one.
You leave him blank? I would leave him blank.
If I knew, if I didn't know who it was, like, I'm like, I can't really speak educated. Like, I wouldn't vote. Or if it was two people, I'm like, I don't like either one of you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to vote.
If I voted for you, you earned my vote.
Yes.
Period. I will undervote all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All the time.
So, yeah. So, yeah.
And that's how it should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other than that, final thoughts, this weather is so dumb.
Amen.
Freeze
that.
Warning.
I have freeze warning, and I had my last long run before the mini on Saturday and just about died. Like I lost 6.5 pounds from after my Wednesday run to after my Saturday run just because it was so hot and muggy.
Just water weight.
Just water weight. Yeah, I know. I'm like, I didn't lose this much weight in 3 days. I just lost that. And then today I'm sitting there watching my kid play soccer, and I'm freezing again.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So
on Monday it snowed. Legit snow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On Saturday, I was running my air conditioner and it was 86 in the shade in Brown County.
Yeah.
It was insanity. Yep. Welcome to Indiana. And now we're worried about the Bell strawberry farm crops, hoping it doesn't frost and screw the local strawberry crop.
Yeah. So,
what an adventure.
Other than that, it's fun to kind of finish the series up. And thanks to everybody that showed up and came and spoke to us.
The only races we didn't get a chance to cover are the county council. So we did pretty good.
Yeah, and we intend to get to those guys in the fall. Yeah. Josh, what do we have to clean up, man? Anything that we've left out, tent pole issues for your campaign that we haven't included that you want to make sure you have a chance to speak on?
I feel like we did a pretty good job today covering a lot of things. I mean, I will say, let me go back to COVID really quickly. One of the things I just want to make sure that I clarify is, I don't know if I specified this enough.
Pull your mic over just a little bit.
I don't know if I specified this enough. I always want to support the person's bodily autonomy, and I want to support the business's rights as themselves to be able to stand as an independent business. I just want to take the government out of it. Because I also, on top of that, think that had the government not been mandating all of these things, how many of the businesses would have actually put those mandates or those requirements into place? Like, a lot of the time, this was stemming directly from a governmental decision that started the issue. Like, we can trace this back. The government's what caused these issues. It's not that. So to correct that issue, I would say go back in, and that's when we have to make that specification between those small businesses and then those publicly traded ones, like what you were saying. But I think it comes back to governmental issue and oversight, overreach. Like, we have governmental overreach, and when it comes to that, we need to make sure we prevent that from happening at all costs, because when the government starts to get their hands in something, it ruins it. And that's just what it is. Like, you can never have a governmental decision that doesn't affect the people in some way. Sometimes it's going to be good, but a lot of the times when they start making those big decisions, it's not going to be beneficial for people. So I do want to specify that and just make sure I clarify. Like, I think that all of these issues stem from the government's decisions. So in order to prevent that from happening again, we just need to take that last step to end this outright, get it done, and then be able to start phasing those out. Like, I'm not saying these are going to be long-term things, but I'm just concerned that with the freedoms and liberties that we lost this time, what's going to happen the next time? And I want to make sure that I'm setting things up and putting things in place to be able to stop the governmental overreach from occurring again. So that, I think I did just want to clarify that with COVID, because I don't know if I specified that enough. I saw the freedoms that we lost, and I want to make sure that never happens again. So I think that was something that needed to be clarified there. But other than that, I think that we covered everything pretty well.
Awesome, man. Bobby, what do you got for us?
I think we covered just about everything. I mean, there's always issues that are going to come up as you're talking to people. But first of all, I just want to say thank you guys for inviting me, having me back. I think this is my
at least third attempt. Third run, right?
Third run, I think. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think we've covered everything. And, you know, May 3rd's a week from today. Mm-hmm. Get out the vote. Get out snuck and, up you know. On us. Yeah,
we may know by this time next week who won.
Oh, by now I hope you do.
Yeah,
by 9 o'clock. I hope so. I hope so. By 9 o'clock. I don't know. There's been
they didn't.
Yep.
You're going to be looking at four different counties reporting results.
Too. I know. Yes. I know. Yeah.
Like by the second, it's going to be what's this?
Yeah, because
Henry County likes to drop it all at one moment. Too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they do. They drop it all at one moment.
Rush County gets theirs in really from past experience. Mm-hmm. Rush County gets in real fast. You get precinct by precinct.
Right.
And I'm guessing Shelby and Hancock, you've maybe got 2 to 4 precincts over there total between those.
We've only got two. Each.
Blue River and Hancock and Hanover and Shelby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, get out and vote and, you know, vote Bobby Plummer May 3rd.
Very good. And are you guys you're still going door to door? You're looking for volunteers?
Still going door to door.
Oh, yes. Yep. All the time.
Looking for volunteers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm sure you've got a big weekend coming up.
Very much so.
Absolutely.
Between now and then.
A lot of breakfasts and foods to eat.
Between now and Tuesday, I hope to hit another almost 1,000 houses.
Yeah.
Myself, and that's not including my volunteers. That's myself and some family members that are going to go with me. So
awesome,
lots to go. Miles. So I'd appreciate any volunteers that are hearing this that want to help. That'd be great. And then vote Gilmore for 54.
All right, D squared.
All right, we're going to be doing some renovations to the studio at some point. And I wanted
are there
to
be power tools involved.
No. We're just going to be rearranging. We're going to be getting producer Zach a better setup, and we're going to be changing out some old in for the new. And I just wanted to give a huge shout out and thank you to our sponsors and our Patreons for making this whole studio possible. Wyland's Flowers, the Slick Pickle, and Big Bounce Inflatables. They've been good to us for like all of the candidate series for a couple years now.
OG supporters.
Right. And they've been really good through the years. We even had Nancy Custer sent me some flowers from Wyland's.
I know.
Yeah.
That was nice of her. She's sweet.
She's great.
Most spectacular thing, because Dakota complained that he had never received flowers before in his life. We walked back in, and there were flowers on the desk the next week.
That's
true. Nancy.
Nancy's a good person. She likes Nancy.
Tell you what, that was the first moment he questioned having made an endorsement in this race.
The first.
Of many. And he's publicly apologized.
I mean, how many is a many, though?
How many endorsements? I know of one endorsement that you made. How many endorsements?
That's it.
How many?
Well, okay. At the very start of this show,
you might as well have shouted into the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Yep. At the very start of this show, I used to get on Facebook and make a post with my list.
Okay,
but I haven't done that in like 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So I don't do that anymore.
Okay,
that stove is hot.
Yes, I apologized on the show last week for doing.
Oh, did you?
I did.
I
made a public apology, and then I said that this week I would tell everyone who I was voting for sheriff, since those guys have already been on.
Oh,
but that was a joke.
Oh, okay. Have you learned? Yeah,
stove I'm definitely not doing it with the guys that could pull me over and get.
Yeah, I will say that I am incredibly appreciative of both Josh and Bobby for joining us this week. We extended the invitation to all of the campaigns. Some took us up on it, some didn't. I think it's been fantastic, and I appreciate you guys very much for helping us get to know you or get to know you better. And I think it's been very valuable for the citizens of District 54 to know who's going to be coming around, and whether or not you're elected to this, Bobby, you're still going to be our county commissioner, and
correct.
I'm guessing Josh. No matter how this shakes out, you're probably not done with local government, local politics, and local leadership.
I probably will not be out of this for a while yet, I would assume.
I ran in 2012, and I'm still here wearing a stupid media hat. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question for each of you that I think would be interesting. Is there a there's 150 legislators in the General Assembly. Is there one that you look to, Josh, as like a you know, this is the role model or the person that you pattern yourself after, or it, that that rings a strikes home with you the most?
There's a little bit. There's little bits of a couple of them. I would say probably some mixture of a. This is hard because I don't want to say that I'm going to be like these people, because there's obviously going to be things that we differ on. So this is a general, I would say probably a mixture of an Anne Vermillion and a John Jacobs or a Curtin Isley kind of all mixed together, because I definitely would stand for the freedoms and things that all of them have been supporting at the State House. So yeah, I'd say probably a mixture of those three. I don't support everything that they've done, but I definitely would say that they align with a lot of what I believe.
All right. And Bobby, same for you.
It's pretty obvious.
I'm just giving you the chance.
No, pretty obvious. Tom Saunders.
Oh, I thought she was going to say Gene Lysing.
Gene Lysing. Well, yeah, I like Gene Lysing too. Tom Saunders, for several reasons. He has given up a lot of political capital to support his constituents. And if you ask anybody at the State House, his constituency services are second to none by anybody at the State House. And he makes that a priority. He makes his district a priority. You know, the things that over the years, not just recently, but over the years that he has lost leadership roles. I mean, things, you know, he stands for his district, and that's what it is about. It's not about politics. It's not about climbing the ladder anywhere. It's about representing and supporting the constituents of the district, whether for it's sure. in session, mm-hmm. January through March or January through April, whenever the, you know, if it's a long session, short session, but it's also the other 7-8 months of the year. You know, it's not just what happens during session. It's what happens 12 months out of the year. And I think he has done an outstanding job in the 26 years that he has been there.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody can fill his shoes. Quite frankly, it's going to be difficult.
There's a lot of institutional knowledge with Tom.
Way that he listened to constituents was crazy. Yeah. Like with the straight ticket voting thing, uh-huh. We just brought it up to him on mm-hmm. On the first mm-hmm. show that he was on, mm-hmm. and then he was like, he asked us about it afterwards. And he's like, "Is this something you guys really care about?" And we're like, "Yeah, I think it's a big deal." And so he like heard our spiel about it. He's mm-hmm. like, "Ah, I agree with you." And then like. The next session, he didn't like even reach out to us or anything.
Yeah, you're like, it's
just,
there.
Scrolling. It's just mm-hmm. We're just like, I'm scrolling through the bills to see what we're going to talk about in our State House episode one time. And I'm like, Tom Saunders, straight ticket voting. I'm like, what?
Yeah. 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 The institutional knowledge that he has is irreplaceable.
Yeah. Just the fact that he just did that mm-hmm. and then. He didn't even care about the clout that would get him mm-mm. with us.
Correct.
He just would do it.
Yeah, he would just do it. Yeah, it's not about his personal gain.
Yep.
It's very rare to find that he's not a politician.
In an
elected official.
Yeah, right. Tom will be on soon. So.
Yes, he will.
Yep, he'll be coming back at least one more time before he's no longer state rep. I special thanks I want to send out to the Henry County Hospital. They've been taking care of my father-in-law. He's been spending the last 24 hours with them. I'm sure he's not the most lovable person at this moment, visiting the emergency room, and now he's mm-hmm. They're running some tests trying to figure out what's going on. So I'm sure it's going to be, you know, it's going to turn out okay.
Hope he's well.
We've been through this rodeo before, but we're very appreciative of the care of the folks over there, and it's not an easy time to be in healthcare, so very thankful for them, and praying for Kevin. So with that, we will see you guys a week from Thursday. Catch you then.